Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Jose Albino, and I'm your host for this evening here on Life Coach Radio Network, and I am hosting from the great city of New York, where it is extremely frigid. I hope all of you East Coast folks are staying warm and being safe. This is your first time listening to my show. Just a bit of background about me. Again, my name is Jose Albino. I'm a life and empowerment coach, and I simply assist individuals remove the personal blocks that are preventing them from living the life that they desire. As a trained psychotherapist and life coach, I fuse modalities, tools, and techniques from both disciplines, counseling and coaching, to assist clients create concrete and sustainable transformative shifts in their lives. As always, I want to thank you and acknowledge you for joining us this Wednesday evening, wherever you may be. Can you believe it? We are almost three weeks into the new year. It's a perfect and optimal time of reflection in terms of setting and reevaluating new goals and intentions for yourself and your families as well. So welcome all to Purposeful Conversations, where I speak to ordinary people about their triumphant and extraordinary personal stories, and also with experts from diverse fields to provide us with their professional insights on how to live a healthy and optimal life. On today's show, we are focusing on managing self-care and stress. Because of the hyper-busy lives that many of us lead, resulting in high stress level, it's very difficult to appropriately focus on taking care of ourselves. And I think the new year presents us with the opportunity for us to reboot and recharge. And we are still basking in the possibility that this time of year provides in terms of creating new goals and resolutions. I find it important to be proactive and have a discussion about how to manage self-care needs and stress before they present themselves. So on the show, we will talk with Dr. Dana Gionta, clinical psychologist, executive coach, and organizational consultant, about what tips and strategies you can exercise to keep you more grounded and balanced as the year progresses. She's an expert on stress management, self-care, and work-life balance, among others, and I will be reading her bio momentarily. As such, this conversation will focus on how to minimize your stress and also focus more on self-care and ways to energize your life and yourself. But before we begin, as typical for my show, I usually set the tone for the show by just referencing a couple of quotes that speak to the conversation that we will have, and also put the listeners in the zone, what I call the zone, and also gives people a few more minutes to join us. So just bear with me. I'll be referencing a couple of quotes. The first one is from Lee Iacocca, and it states, "In times of greatness, stress, or adversity, it's always best to keep busy, to apply your anger and your energy into something positive." Second one is from Mary Lou Henner, and she states, "Being in control of your life and having realistic expectations about your day-to-day challenges are the keys to stress management, which is perhaps the most important ingredient to living a happy, healthy, and rewarding life." Second to last, simple, "The greatest weapon against stress is our ability to choose one thought over another," and that's by Mr. William James. And the last one is, "No one is going to love you or nurture you better than you can. The relationship that you have with yourself is the longest relationship that you will ever be in. So be kind and compassionate with yourself and your personal care needs." And that's by this great, great philosopher person named Jose Albino. I wrote that quote. So let's begin. So there you have it. All those words make you think critically about your life just for a moment and put you in the headspace for the exciting conversation we're about to have. So moving forward, if during our conversation, if you have any comments or questions or concern, please feel free. Our lines are always open to call us at 646-716-9397. Again, that's 646-716-9397. And this show will also be archived in the Life Coach Radio Network. You can always go into Blog Talk Radio, search for Life Coach Radio Network, and you will find this show amongst other very, very pertinent and powerful shows within Life Coach Radio Network. So my guest today is Dr. Jayanta, as I said. She has an impressive bio and a list of accomplishments. She specializes in leadership and team development, effective communication and organizational health, and has worked in a wide range of settings. Dr. Jayanta has also worked with high-potential managers and senior executives in small to larger Fortune 500 organizations from diverse industries, including financial services, consumer goods, and hospitality. Dr. Jayanta offers seminars and programs on topics ranging from coaching and listening skills for managers, team emotional intelligence, work-life balance, executive self-care, and evidence-based practices of a healthy workplace. In addition, she served as an adjunct professor at the University of New Haven, Department of Industrial Organizational Psychology. She is currently authoring a book scheduled to be released soon, 2014, which is basically a practical evidence-based guide for effective stress management and self-care. So, Dr. Jayanta, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jose. I'm really happy to be here.
Fantastic. All right, so let's rock and roll. Let's dive right in. So, Dr. Jayanta, I'm sure we will touch on many different constructs within the next 45 minutes or so. But let's start with your entry into the specialized niche of self-stress management and self-care, which, of course, ties into our work-life balance. What amongst different specializations that you do have, particularly this one, what made you decide to make this one of your specializations?
Well, actually, you know, it's a great question. And by the way, I love the quotes that you started out with. And so I didn't initially decide to specialize in this, but it really came about through my professional training and background as a psychologist, initially working with a lot of families around illness and health. And then through personal experience and family experience with my own family members' health issues, when I realized just how valuable and important self-care was in order to maintain the energy and all of the resources one needs to be a caregiver and to, you know, manage and create that work-life balance. So it was a combination of professional experience and personal experience that really helped me kind of focus and decide that I wanted to do more of this and help other people in this area.
Got it. So it sounds like you went through some personal experiences combined with your professional expertise, and that kind of birthed this necessity that you think it's important for people to really focus on.
Right, exactly. My mother at some point became quite ill, and I became a caregiver, my sister and I, actually, and it was the first time that I really recognized just how challenging something like this could be for someone. You know, I'd observe it as a professional and in training, you know, working with the families around illness, but it's very different to experience it personally. And, you know, it gave me a very new appreciation for the challenges of caregiving and coping. So that was kind of the first initial recognition of how important it is to take care of ourselves so that we can really be there and help others. If we don't have the resources and we really tax our own resources emotionally or physically, then we really can't be there for others and present, you know, have enough energy and emotionally be the person we want to be to be there for our families, our loved ones, our, you know, our coworkers, things like that. So that really heightened my appreciation for both the importance of stress management and self-care.
Great. Thank you for sharing. And it's great work. I think that our culture really, you know, doesn't put that much emphasis on the importance of self-care and managing stress and ways in which it can affect other aspects of our lives, which we will talk a little bit later on in the conversation. Some of the tools and techniques that we will discuss in reference to self-care can be pretty much be applied to any aspect or period of our life. But let's start with stress. In general, what is it? What is stress?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. At its simplest, one of the kind of simplest definitions is really is anything that we perceive to be as a challenge or a threat to our kind of our well-being or even our ability to cope. So stress in itself is not a bad thing. Unfortunately, sometimes we get the impression that experiencing stress is not good, but there really is healthy levels of stress and unhealthy. So stress can be very valuable. It's just that when it becomes, when we experience too much of it, or if it goes on for too long a period of time, then it becomes unhealthy for us.
So there is an element of stress that you deem to be productive or acceptable?
Right, exactly. I mean, stress when we, you know, when we encounter, for example, an emergency situation, it's very valuable that we're able to have a healthy stress response so we can respond, mm-hmm. you know, very quickly and mentally alert and really manage the situation very well. Or even, for example, you know, performance sports or athletes, they really they have a very positive stress response so they can have the adrenaline needed to do very well in whatever performance situation they're in. So, yes, for a performance and emergency situations, it can be very valuable. It's just in small doses. It's just really in higher levels of stress. I like to kind of think of it as a very practical way is we think of stress on a scale of 1 to 10. So 1 being very little stress, 10 being very high. You know, in a range of 2, 3, 4, you know, that's kind of a very minor, mild range of stress, and that's very manageable. But when it reaches higher levels, you know, 5 or 6, and that's still moderate, but 6, 7, 8, and higher, it becomes more in the chronic range or a very high range. And at that level, from 8 to 10, is really how I like to look at it. If we experience that for long periods of time, then we could, you know, really start to have some health symptoms and experience it, you know, either physically start to have some health effects or mentally feel ourselves becoming overwhelmed and, you know, very irritable. And so there's different effects at a higher level for longer periods of time.
That makes sense. Now, knowing that the stress has its positives and in the higher spectrums, it can be very detrimental. How do we know when we're sitting in it, when we're sitting in this space that really doesn't speak to the fight or flight, really in this space where it's more to the higher end of the spectrums? What are the cues? How do we identify when we're in that space?
Yeah, that is and it's something that we're writing about in the book. And I think it's very challenging for everyone, even as a psychologist and, you know, at some point my specialization in health, but it's very hard to really know when we're experiencing high levels of stress, partly because, you know, as you mentioned earlier, our culture is so fast-paced and we're so busy that kind of being stressed is almost a norm, as you uh-huh. described. So sometimes the best way and some of the ways we've people really recognize their level of stress is often when they get away from it. When, for example, they take a vacation or removed from, let's say, a very stressful experience. Have you ever had that yourself? You're gone
yes.
on vacation and you notice just how, you may then realize just how stressed you were, but you didn't realize it when you were in the situation, right? In the environment. It's kind of like there's an analogy about being like a frog in the pot. I don't know if you've heard of that metaphor, but it's very valuable because many times we are that frog in the pot and we don't even realize it. So are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not. I'm not familiar. But as you're talking and what you're making valid points, what comes up for me and what I'm seeing is like, you know, sitting in the eye of a storm, and you know, sitting on in this the eye of this storm for so long, that it's normal. You normalize it, but once you remove yourself from that situation, you realize, wait a minute, that's a very chaotic space that I was in. So it sounds like it takes a person removing themselves from their natural environment or the environment that they're used to kind of realize, wait a minute, there's something going on, there's something wrong with what's happening with my existence or my stress levels. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's exactly it. It's right. Sometimes we're in it so long, and I like to call it, you know, over time, working with a number of clients and even my, you know, personal experience, a good concept to think about is like tolerance to stress. So we think we can handle a certain level of stress, and just like this frog in the pot, you know, if you put a frog in a pot in cool water, it, you know, it goes around, it doesn't experience any problem, you know, it thinks it's fine, and as you slowly raise the heat, it doesn't even recognize that it's, you know, really at risk, right, until the water is boiling, and many times, until unfortunately it's sometimes too late, but many times that's what happens to us, that we start out, let's say the stress level is 3 or 4, and then slowly it increases, and we start to feel like we're tolerating the stress well, that we think we can cope with it, we think we're handling it, but we're not, and it's hard to recognize that when we're in that, when we're experiencing it, unless, and there are signs. So one is, if you do remove yourself, you know, whether intentionally or it happens, you go on vacation or you're on a business conference and you're away from it, you can experience it, or away from, you know, a family environment that may be stressful. But also, if you start to experience physical symptoms or emotional symptoms that you never had before, that can be a sign. For example, if you're usually very low-key and, you know, you kind of take things very, you know, very casually and you're very calm and you notice yourself getting more irritable, more short-tempered, that could be a sign that you're under more stress. You've probably heard a lot of people talking about, you know, how that, you know, how people can become very, you know, whether it's on the road or, you know, in the work environment, yeah, or at families, or they don't feel like they can be present, so they become more distracted. They can't focus, can't concentrate. They start to have headaches stomach aches.
Or road rage.
Exactly. Road rage is a huge sign. If you never usually have road rage and you start to experience it, it's a great cue that you're really under a high level of stress at that point in your life, whether it's the past 2 weeks or the past month, and your stress level is probably in a moderate to high range. That's a great cue. Or if you start, you know, because snapping at loved ones or coworkers or having a short fuse or starting to have any physical symptoms, really having difficulty sleeping or wanting to sleep too much, those can be signs that you're really under quite a bit of stress. Even accidents. I don't know if you've probably car accidents, a little like falling down, tripping, falling down the stairs, having little fender benders. A lot of times when people are under stress, they're not concentrating as well. So they have, they're more frequent opportunities of having, these unexpected accidents. And that's another sign that you're under quite a bit of stress, a high level.
It's a fantastic, fantastic example. And it's interesting. It really leads to my next question. Sometimes when I'm, you know, I've worked with individuals or even have personal relationships, and sometimes, you know, I just have to take a step back because they exhibit some of these cues. They're either yelling or they're irritable or they're saying things that are really mean or unnecessary. And then, you know, that's when I, you know, tell myself they're going through something or they may be in this high level of stress that they may not necessarily see themselves. So in your opinion, why do you think it's so difficult to manage or to even identify? You know, is it because we're just, the work-life balance is such a struggle that we're always in this space? Based on your experience and your opinion, why do you think it's so difficult to manage or even identify?
Right. No, those are really great points. Well, one is what we just kind of discussed. I think it's really hard to identify the high level of stress because of this tolerance to stress that it kind of increases slowly over time. I mean, if we were thrown into a very, like, chaotic, high-stress environment, we would most likely immediately recognize this as being extremely stressful and, like you said, remove yourself from the situation. But most of the stress that we experience is incremental. It starts out slowly. It increases. And before you know it, we think we're coping. We may feel a little stressed, but we think we're handling it. So we don't recognize that it's actually gone on to a level of 9 or 10. It's extremely high. It becomes chronic. And we feel like we've adapted to it. But as human beings, we cannot adapt to that high level of stress. Over time, our bodies really cannot handle it. And so that's when we start to develop the physical symptoms. You know, another reason is, like you said, because with work-life balance, it's very challenging to create this work-life balance. And I think part of that is because we often don't give ourselves permission to take good care of ourselves. You know, we don't make ourselves a priority, and we often feel guilty or selfish, and that's an important part why people have such difficulty really making self-care a priority, because there's often a feeling that taking time for themselves is selfish, and they should be doing other things, or they're not productive, right? If we take time out for ourselves, then we're not being as productive. You know, we're not there for others, family members, coworkers. So we usually, unfortunately, make ourselves or put ourselves last. And I think because of that, we don't take enough time for ourselves to, you know, take the steps to help manage our stress levels and really increase our self-care or make it something that we regularly do.
It's so interesting.
Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. And I'm always thinking, you know, it's like a double-edged sword, because one can be sitting in the space of not even recognizing, you know, the stress levels and how it's rising. You know, and of course, our bodies have a way of shutting us down, and I think that's beyond 10 when our body says, listen, I need to shut you down because you're just not handling the stress, you know, the physical side. But it's interesting that you mentioned that we're talking about the stress and the higher spectrum, but then, you know, on the self-care piece, we're talking, you know, there's that other internal battle, which is if we take care of ourselves, you know, we feel guilty. If we take care of ourselves, we may be judged. If we take care, it's focused on ourselves. You know, are people going to, you know, start whispering about us? Like, you know, we are a culture of also being concerned that if we really focus on ourselves a little too much, then that's also seen as a little negative. So with that, you know, I want to focus a little bit on the new year and kind of put a little bit of a positive spin to this. So, of course, let's say we're in this space of stress. And, of course, we understand that we're going to talk a little bit about self-care also a little bit more in depth. But, for you know, this is, you know, the time of year, you know, for the first or second week of the year, everyone is coasting in with their resolution, those who make them or still make them, or create new goals. And, you know, this is the time, the third week, where, you know, it just goes towards the wind. People stop being committed to what they say they were going to get committed to based on their resolutions and goals. So, you know, what actionable steps, you know, which may or may not have to do with stress that starts presenting itself at this point in our lives, three weeks into the new year. But what can we do to minimize our stress levels in relation to, let's say, keeping track of our goals? What actionable steps can we take to, you know, lead a more productive life or these next coming weeks or months?
Okay, yeah, that's right. This is very timely, especially, you know, the new year, and there's lots of resolutions being made, and which are very important, and it shows people's, you know, real desires to make positive change in their life, which is definitely takes courage and is really commendable. So I think first off is, you know, helping people just reflect first on why you decided to make that resolution in the first place. You know, why is it important to you? What is it about this resolution in particular? I mean, you could have made any resolution, any change, or desired change. So why this one? And I think increasing the clarity around that, so you can recognize for yourself why this is really important to you and asking yourself, is this something that's really valuable for you, or is this coming from someone else or this or others' expectations for you? So first, that question, just a little reflection about the importance of it. And second, if you really have decided and really committed to this and said, this is something that I really want for myself or my health or my life, then I think the next important step would be really to make sure that it's very realistic, that whatever the goal is, and it would be helpful to write it down, but to really think about what are these, what it's realistic, and only make one or two goals for the new year. So sometimes people get so excited and enthusiastic, they make 3 to 5 goals or more, you know, changes that they want in their life, which can really kind of overwhelm one. And, you know, the key is you really want to set yourself up to succeed. So really try to minimize that you're limited to one or two goals. Make it very realistic. So what is practical? Instead of saying, if you've never exercised, for example, you start saying that you're going to exercise, you know, 5 or 6 days a week. That really sounds like that is a very difficult target to make, right? So whatever it is, make it very practical, realistic steps in terms of reaching the goals. And if you need help with that, you know, think about, you know, if you have a friend or you have somebody who's really reached the goal that you're looking to, you know, you can consult or speak with them. You can consider, you know, hiring a coach perhaps and mm-hmm. helping working with someone, you know, a professional or a psychologist or therapist, mm-hmm. somebody who can actually help you set the goals and kind of come up with an actual plan, like a nice plan for you, so to come up with realistic steps if you're having challenges with that. The next step I would say is really just to recognize that big, larger changes really occur in steps, very incrementally. And I think one of the greatest challenges is people, especially in the new year, they become very discouraged, you know, very quickly. Mm. So if they don't see change, you know, or progress in 3 or 4 weeks, or if they slipped up, they feel like they failed. And you know, what we know about, you know, a lot of the research and behavior change, and this is a very positive, exciting thing, is to build in relapse. So people, we will slip up, you know, we will relapse, we will fall off the horse, right, whatever analogy, you know, you may have others, right, whatever it is, but we will. And so to recognize, and that's a realistic expectation, and to say, okay, that's all right. You know, look, the past week I exercised twice, or I set a boundary with a friend or a colleague. You know, I've made these steps. That's progress. That's great. So just really give ourselves credit and for everything positive that we do. And if we slip up, if we have a relapse, that's okay. Just go back to the goal and think about if you need to adjust the steps to make them more realistic or more practical, then go ahead and do that. But to keep giving yourself credit and encouragement, and they even want to write it down. Sometimes I encourage clients to create like a victory list or a, you know, a progress list, something that they can look at and say, wow, look at the, you know, look at the accomplishments, or look how far I've come from a month ago, right, or 3 months ago. So it's usually very helpful.
I love that, and you know, I love all your all the strategies you laid down. I think they're all very important. I just want to reference that relapse piece, you know, because it's just, it's more of an aha moment that we have to factor that in, because life happens, things happen, and, you know, I particularly enjoy the piece of, you know, rebooting and re-strategizing and getting back on the horse or the mule or the pony and just, you know, continue whatever it is that you like to ride, right? And get back on it.
But I
like that humanistic piece, because I think that when we set goals and resolutions, or people in general, that there's this, you know, this type A driven mentality that we have to do it, we have to achieve it, and this is the time I decided to do, and this is how I decided to do it, and this is the way that I decided to do it. But to kind of, you know, really plug in a relapse, the possibility of a relapse into that, and be really compassionate with that piece with ourselves, that life happens, things may happen, and that all we need to do is just kind of get back on and continue on that particular journey towards that goal. So I think those were fantastic. Thank you for that.
Oh, great. Well, you're welcome. Yeah, and I love what you just said about compassion. I think that's really key, is to be really compassionate and gentle with yourself, because many times we're often very hard on ourselves. And as soon as we, you know, slip up or make a mistake, or, you know, we perceive that as something that we're not committed or as a failure. So to be gentle and just keep encouraging yourself. And if you really, you know, it will happen. You know, your change, and really notice the positive changes, and little by little, you know, what you thought was impossible will be possible.
Right. I agree 100%. I mean, I was having a hell of a workshop this weekend, and doing a workshop, and we were talking about that piece of compassion that we have to remember, and it's just, you know, we tend to, you know, and even it speaks to self-care. We tend to be hardest on ourselves than we are with, you know, maybe a best friend or family member. And if a friend calls us and says, you know, I really only went to the gym once, and, you know, X, Y, and Z, you're not going to say, you're so dumb, you're so stupid, you're so this, you're so that, how can you do that? That's not the conversation we would have with a friend or someone that we respect, or it's really in our inner circle. But oftentimes, you know, some of that negative self-talk is really what we project on ourselves. So absolutely to have, you know, that relapse piece and that compassion piece, to really, you know, have that conversation with yourself and keep pushing yourself. So
it's so true. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the other, you know, another important piece, which I've, you know, found working with many clients and even myself in trying to make changes, is to also recognize that depending on the type of change you're looking to make, part of that is it could be learning a new skill. Hmm. So it's not just making a change, but it's learning a skill. So it takes some talent. It takes, like, there's a learning curve, right? When we're learning any new thing, there's a learning curve. And we often don't recognize that there's skill involved, whether it's trying to set boundaries or learning how to set boundaries, for example, or learning how to communicate more assertively. Let's say if we would kind of speak more passively or aggressively. So it's a skill. So you're going to mess up. You're going to make mistakes. There's going to be challenges. There's a curve. But that's okay, because you keep, you know, focusing on, you know, your progress, and you keep developing the skill. And before you know it, you know, you've really reached, you've made tremendous gains and made excellent progress, right?
Totally. And if you continue on that path, you're going to be better than when you were before you even decided to go on this journey. But I agree. You're not only learning a new skill or applying certain skills. You're forming new habits. And we all know that old habits are extremely hard to break. They're doable, but they're very hard to break. And new habits also need to be pardoned. You know, the new habits that we're creating for ourselves, whatever they may be, they also need some wings of sensitivity behind them, because we're creating new habits as well. So completely agree. Now, I think that a lot of individuals, I know in conversations and working with people, really have this, don't really know what self-care looks like. You know, people think that it may be, you know, you get 3 weeks vacation and you take vacation. You know, some people think that, you know, self-care may be going out on the weekends, and that may very well, it's what looks like for them. But paint us a picture of, in your experience, perhaps working with clients, like, what does it look like? And is it different for everybody?
Right. Now, these are great points. Absolutely. I think in our culture especially, it seems like there's been an emphasis on the physical dimension of self-care, so that it's nutrition and exercise, sleep. You know, these are, and they're very important, right? They're kind of the pillars of caring for ourselves. However, you know, self-care, as you mentioned, not just vacation, like taking a vacation, but I really have come to consider self-care, and through my work with, you know, the clients and my own experience, to really broaden it and really think of it as any action, any behavior that we take that really supports our well-being, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, so to really look at it in a much broader lens. And that's something that we do on a regular, consistent basis. So that's kind of key, because as we practice self-care and do it more on a consistent basis, something that supports our well-being, it actually helps protect from stress. And in some cases, one could even consider it as a means of preventing stress from increasing, right, becoming problematic in our lives. So it acts as a buffer. And also, good stress management practices are really acts of self-care. So you can see the incredible relationship between them.
Right.
Cool. Which is exciting. But so self-care, you know, so I consider it, you know, for example, and I really focus a lot with clients on the emotional aspect. So how are we at setting boundaries, you know, whether at work, you know, with our colleagues or, you know, interacting with customers or clients? How are we at home, you know, our ability to give permission to say no or do things if we feel like our energy is being really taxed, to be able to, you know, implement boundaries to protect ourselves, whether it's our energy or health. How are we at communicating and really expressing what our needs are or our desires and getting those met? How are we at managing our health? You know, are we considering what our, you know, really just evaluating our health and for example, you know, just going on taking physical exams and monitoring all of the things that we need to do just to manage our health. I mean, those are simple things that we can do, taking vacations, enough rest days, you know, taking a weekend away or a week away. Many Americans don't even take their vacation. I mean, we only have 2 weeks. Many people only have... Right, and they don't even, oftentimes, either because of the work situation or their own expectations, but many don't feel comfortable even taking some time off. It's about, you know, so not only our physical and also mental. If we're feeling, you know, really overwhelmed with the pressures in our life, right? It could be financial strain. It can be health issues or family strain. How are we, proactively addressing those so that we can feel more empowered and more in control so it doesn't compromise our health and well-being? So self-care is, you know, I think of it as all of those things that we're doing, whether it's in many of those different, you know, areas to take better care of ourselves so that we can really protect our resources, which is our energy, our time, you know, being able to feel, be in a good mood, right, be present for those we love. You know, the better we're able to take care of ourselves, the richer in terms of our energy and our ability to really be there and be in a very, to bring our best selves to our relationships, whether personally or professionally.
Got it. So it's basically like, you know, when they have that little funky video when we're flying in the airplane and they say that before you help your, you know, God forbid something's happening on the plane, it's an emergency, before you help the other person with their mask, put your mask on first, because you're not going to be that viable or that energized or that you know, useful to someone if your tank isn't full. If you're not really protecting yourself,
right,
and really taking care of yourself, how can you possibly have the energy or, you know, be 100% towards helping another person?
Right, exactly. Now, that's a great analogy that's probably many people are very familiar with. Yeah, and it's very true, you know. I mean, instead of thinking of self-care as selfish, I would love for us in our culture to kind of start to think of it as self-consideration. You know, really have, and even self-love, it's self-consideration that... It's not by doing that, it's actually an act of giving as well, because by taking ourselves and giving time for ourselves to make ourselves a little bit more of a priority, by doing that, we're able to actually give and be better people, give our better selves to others. And so it's really a wonderful gift, not just to ourselves, but to other people as well, to those we love and our coworkers and other people, our neighbors and those, you know, in our lives.
I like that. I like to have, you know, for us to be a better wrapped gift and shinier and tighter, like for us to be a better gift to others, you know, we need to be considerate towards ourselves, you know, and really
right.
take care of ourselves. And it's interesting you mentioned, you know, that we Americans, we leave all this time on, you know, all this free time, right? Because those of us who do work for an organization, we do get time off, and we leave it on the table. We don't take it off, whether it's because, you know, we're just too busy with, again, the work-life balance, or whether, you know, what am I going to look like when there's all these projects and everyone is not taking their 4 weeks, I'm only going to take two. You know, whatever it is that this ideal person or this how they want to be perceived in their work environment, it's interesting how that, you know, the time that you're legally able to take, you know, to really focus and really nurture yourself, we're not doing. But I want to contextualize that piece for a while, you know, the piece where, you know, we're not taking care of ourselves. We're not really, you know, even when, you know, even in contracts or let's take the issue of, you know, vacation time that, you know, I think across internationally we're probably the country that really takes the less time, you know, the least amount of time off. Now, I want to contextualize it. You know, we've been talking about, you know, care, stress management, and what strategies and techniques we can apply and what we can do to facilitate that. And, you know, creating a work-life balance is not an easy thing to do, but it's very necessary. Now, talk to me about, you know, what I hope this resonates with people. What can happen if we don't manage our stress levels or take care of ourselves? Is there a link between, you know, stress or lack of self-care and illness?
Right. No, that's it's a great question, and yes, there is the research. You know, there's a significant body of research that shows that, you know, high levels of stress was, you know, for long periods, which is what, you know, many people may hear as being referred to as chronic stress. Over time, you know, our bodies are not equipped to deal with that, you know, high levels. So eventually, you know, you will start to have, or one will start to have symptoms, some type of, you know, they'll be experiencing symptoms, whether on the physical level. So as we kind of touched upon before, they may start to have, you know, headaches. They may start to have digestive issues. They may start to experience neck or back problems. On a cognitive level, they may have difficulty concentrating. They notice they can't focus as well. They feel like maybe multitasking is becoming very difficult for them because of the stress level. Emotionally, they may start to become depressed. I mean, there's research showing that chronic stress can lead to depression, mood changes. So we know that that there's evidence for that. Increased irritability, anger, as you mentioned, kind of road rage. So there's rage issues, behavioral, and so people behaviorally can start to feel out of control and may do things that they normally wouldn't do, or like you said, say things, yell, you know, lose their temper. They start to feel overwhelmed, so they may start to procrastinate because of the behavior changes. They may become more procrastinating. Start to engage in behaviors that are unhealthy. For example, drinking. They may start drinking a lot more, smoking, overeating, right? All the things, or shopping. So we have retail therapy, okay?
Right.
All the things that, right?
HSN, and you know, just, you know, taking out a class and going shopping at retail therapy. That's a big one.
Right, exactly. It is a big one. So there's lots of things that behaviorally we may start to do that are not normal for us, but because we're under this high level of stress and we're not able to manage it in a healthy, effective way, it starts showing up in other ways. And so we really can't escape from it. It shows up, whether it's physical, you know, on a cognitive level, you know, emotionally, behaviorally. We may start to isolate and withdraw from people, so it can affect our relationships, our performance at work, right? We may feel burnt out. There's often there's growing research about, you know, employees feeling burnt out because of, you know, high levels of stress and, you know, the demands, role overload. So it really does affect us, and it can lead to illness, especially if, you know, we're not treating the stress and not managing it, and if it's really at a high level, to make a change. if you need to make a change, or seek professional help. If you're having trouble managing on your own, or after speaking with friends and family, then seek professional help to get some support and figure out and develop a proactive plan that you can implement to really control it and to manage it better. Because not doing anything usually in a high-stress situation most likely will lead to it increasing and the situation getting worse. So,
you know, I appreciate that, and I appreciate your answers. I mean, it was important that I asked that question, simply, you know, particularly to hear from someone who's worked in this field for a while and is an expert on self-care and stress, simply because, you know, there are many, many studies out there that undoubtedly may not reference that, you know, it's causing this, but there's definitely a high level of correlation between, you know, stress and definitely, you know, not really taking care of your needs, your personal care needs, your self-care needs. And I, for one, saw it strongly. I worked with seniors for over 15 years, and I got to see the other end of the spectrum in terms of the chronic illnesses that they exhibited or that they were experiencing. Again, there's no studies linking that, the causation of it, but there's definitely a correlation, and a lot of it was explained to me by the clients that I used to have, the clients of mine who were seniors who were talking about their lives and the stress levels and how did they take care of themselves and their needs. They were focused on their families and their loved ones and their children and how they really didn't focus on even focusing on their passion and their dreams and how that, you know, they felt really contributed to multiple chronic illnesses, from high blood pressure to depression to anxiety to a plethora of illnesses. So I appreciate your thoughts on that. I mean,
this
conversation has been fantastic, and I want to make sure that, you know, before we move on and wrap up the next couple of minutes, I know that you have a very exciting book being released very, very soon. I want you to talk a little bit about that and just tell us a little bit about that particular publication.
Sure. Yeah. No, we're very excited about it. It's my co-author, Dr. Dan Guerra, and we're going to be calling it From Stressed Out to Centered, A Practical Guide to a More Relaxed, Happier You. And we really created it as a practical guidebook for really the general public, and we're hoping to target, you know, people in the ages of around 20 to about 70 or even 75. So it has a broad reach. And to really help people to kind of better understand what stress is and really look at the relationship between stress and self-care. And knowing that, you know, everything that they do, any step they take to take better care of themselves and to, you know, make themselves more of a priority is actually helping them manage and even prevent stress, especially the increase of stress. And everything they do consciously to manage their stress, whatever steps they take and behaviors they make, whether it's mindfulness or yoga or, you know, doing something that, as you mentioned, hobby, something fun, something that pursuing a dream or doing something that they find really, you know, fun and enjoyable, all of that adds to and is a reflection of their self-care. And integrating both of those in their lives will really help them lead a more happier and more calmer life, and we hope a more, you know, enriched life. So the book is very pragmatic, so we include lots of strategies and techniques and real-life stories so that people can identify with different ways stress may show up and different self-care strategies that they can use from reading these stories and from looking at and reading the chapters and the strategies that we recommend. And at the end of the book, we're having an individual action plan so they can, after reflecting on what changes they'd like to make, they can, you know, use this guide and create this plan for themselves about what type of stress management, self-care goals they'd like to make for themselves. So we want to make it very, very down to earth and very practical, so they can really, so people can really benefit from it, and then hopefully carry it with them in their pocketbooks or their briefcases, and use it as a guidebook to help them. So we're really excited about it. And it's based on, it took us about 2.5 years to write, and it's based on about 20 years of work with clients in this area of health and wellness and self-care and stress. So, it's hopefully coming out in the next
exciting.
6 months or so. Thank
exciting.
You.
So
yeah, it is.
I congratulate you and the co-author. I mean, based on this conversation and on the back end, me knowing your personal professional work, I don't doubt that it's going to be a huge success. And I like the fact that, you know, it's practical and it's pragmatic. And I think in this day and age, that's really what people are looking for, just what's practical, what's pragmatic, what are the takeaways, what are the actionable steps that they can take. So it sounds like it's definitely going to be a book that they can apply to their own lives. So congratulations.
Yeah.
With that.
Oh, thank you, Jose. Yeah, we're really excited about it. Yeah, we wanted to make it something that everybody could use, and it's very practical and not, again, everyone really has limited time. So to make it something that's easy to read, to get through pretty quickly, but really, useful and valuable. Little, the steps and the techniques that they can use at work, they can use at home. So we're looking forward to the feedback from the readers, and I really appreciate the positive comments and the success, the wish for success for it. So I hope, we had the intention to really help others, and I just hope, and I'm looking forward to hearing the feedback from our readers. So thank you. This has been great.
I'll definitely pick up a book and support it. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great.
And having said that, Doctor, so please let us know, let us the listeners know how to reach you should they have any follow-up questions, may want to work with you, or even related to the book. What is the best way for them to reach you for business matters?
Sure. The best way would be email, which is drdr.gionta, G-I-O-N-T-A, @gmail.com. They can also visit the website, my website, which is www.counselingconnecticut, all spelled out, .com. And there I have my email as well as the number to reach me, which is 203-626-2148. So yeah, I would welcome any comments about from our talk today. If any inquiries, be happy to share this with others or clarify any points that we discussed today. Or definitely, I do coaching and counseling as well, and as we mentioned, executive coaching. So I look forward to hearing from others, and especially when the book comes out, I look forward to the feedback as well. So this was great, Jose, and I. And I think it's wonderful what you're doing with the radio show as well, and reaching so many people and providing such valuable information. It's wonderful.
I appreciate that. Well, Dr. Gionta, muchas gracias.
De nada.
Muchas gracias for being here and sharing your expertise with us regarding stress and its management, as well as self-care concerns. I wish you the best of luck moving forward personally, professionally, particularly with your book and all your future endeavors. So please reach out to her if you have any questions or concerns. As for me, you can reach me at info@josealbinolifecoach.com. Visit my website, www.josealbino.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @josealbinocoach. Again, thank you again for our guest. I want to thank our guests, and thank you all for listening. And until next time, and always remember, which is my quote, that actually is not my quote, but I actually like to reference it towards the end, which is simply, right? It's not my quote, but I wrote it down on the paper. But it's basically, no, really, it's basically, until next time, always remember that those that got to where they are began where they were. Those that got to where they are began where they were. So whatever you want to accomplish or whatever changes you want to make in your life, big or small, simply take a small step and take action. It's not that hard. I promise. So thank you, Dr. Gianza. Thank you all for listening.
Very true.
Have a good night.
Okay, good night.
Good night.